Hello, welcome to Careers in Tech. I'm your host, Patrick. On the Careers in Tech show, we explore the stories, secrets, and skills of people who broke into tech without a computer science degree or from a non-technical background, who are here to share their stories to impact your own career goals and those around you. We want to help you see the possibilities when it comes to breaking into tech from a non-technical background, as well as working your way up as either a product designer, product manager, or software engineer. Our mission is to cast the light before you and help you see the bigger picture when it comes to breaking into tech and help you see what is possible if you take that critical step. The show has got episodes with product managers, product designers, CEOs, CTOs, and other people who broke into tech without a standard college degree, as well as two boxes for skills like negotiation, personal branding, teamwork, and many more. So if you want to learn and improve your professional and career life, you are going to be right at home with us. If you want to have a career in tech from a non-technical background, you can enroll in Skill Embassy Product Accelerator, and we will help you get started on the right path. You are going to have mentorship and support from world-class professionals. So please head over to www.skillembassy.com and sign up on one of the available courses and then start your career journey as soon as possible. Awesome. Today with us here is Tony. Welcome, Tony.
Welcome. Nice to be here.
Awesome. We are very grateful to have you, Tony. So Tony is a software engineer who has worked in the industry for many years. He has worked in the areas of building backend applications and working with top companies to help them solve their problems and build solutions for broader users. So we are very glad to have you here, Tony.
Right, I'm 58 now.
Awesome.
Getting on a bit. I've been in IT officially since 1987.
Wow.
I started learning to program in 1976 at school.
Okay.
I got lucky there in that there was a free period. So they put a vocational course on, which was called Computer Applied Science. Back in those days, schools couldn't afford computers. Well, not unless they were really, really good schools, not little local comprehensives that I went to. But the teacher had actually built his own 8-bit microprocessor from a kit. So I learned how to program in machine code on that, mainly on paper, actually, because getting computer time is much more expensive than writing time. So I learned how to write code on paper to do what are called dry runs. I don't know if you've seen them. Essentially, you just write down your logic and then you mentally be the computer.
Is it where you punch right. you punch cards, or that's
no different. There's no cards. No, this is actually on pen and paper exercise. Wow. So you write your logic down, and then you put you write a little table out with a solid, say all your input variables. Say you're doing a square, you say, right, if I put one in, when it squares, the answer should be two, and so forth. And there used to be a lot of that went on because, like I say, getting time on the computer, a lot was shared, was much more expensive than a student's time. So you try to get as much right before you actually wrote a line of code, before you actually put a line of code inside the machine. That was a heavy exercise as well, because you had to convert it all into hex and load it in. It wasn't using high-level languages. So I did that at 14. I learned BASIC with line numbers in night school, 16. But in the UK at that time, jobs were very, very scarce.
Okay.
So I ended up joining the Navy. And then when I came out, I was looking for a job desperately, and they put me on what's called a YTS, which is essentially indentured service. So you get your benefits for turning up to work. But they told me I could work with computers.
Okay.
So I went for it. Envoy, working with computers, was typing numbers in my piece of paper. It was not coding, it wasn't designing, it wasn't anything. It was a data operator. But while I was there, a job came up, which was very rare, and I happened to be in the manager's office at the time when somebody's leaving on my YTS. So I waved my hand in the air and said, I could do that job. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing that I'd recommend to everybody. When there's an opportunity there, snatch it.
You grab it, yeah.
Don't wait about for a better one. Mm-hmm. Don't think, have a go.
Get in there. Do it later or something.
Yeah. You can learn on the job, but it's attitude that counts much more than aptitude.
Okay.
And my attitude was good, and it'd been good all the way through the YTS. So they actually gave me the job. And that was more video operating, but on shifts. So I used to sit there and tap numbers away for an 8-hour shift on nights, sometimes on nights at 3 o'clock in the morning, etc. And I got, I thought, I want to do more than this. Mm-hmm. So the next thing you need is ambition. So I started doing a correspondence degree with the Open University.
Okay.
I never actually bothered finishing that because I got a job before I did, but I was showing willing. And about that time, the business I was working for, which was a steel mill, decided to set up its own computer system. And they needed somebody to get the data into it. So I put myself forward for doing that. So I learned the new computer system and I was familiar with the old data. Because I did that well, when a job came, when they decided to man that up and actually get some people in there to do it, yeah, again, I waved him hand and said I could do that. And that's when, in 1987, I got my first start as an assistant IT support development technician.
Okay.
It was a very long job title for a very small job. And that's when I started officially coding. This is before Windows started.
Oh, okay.
I was doing. I think the first computer, that was the first real computer I used, business computer, was an XT286. So yeah. that had floppy drives and so forth. And I learned how to do Paradox, which is a little database. It does stuff a bit like Excel does when it's in database mode. And I did that for about six years. Mm-hmm. Then there was this company restructured a bit and then they got bought out. And the guys who were running the computer system that drove the mill all got retained by the parent business. And I'd been up there and I'd been reading the books on how, because it was a Microvac system. And I didn't know anything about that. So I was reading the manuals and learning on my own time. So then, again, you've got to go out and learn. You've got to be able to do stuff. And they set up a team to run that system and the new thing. And I put my hand up and said, I can do that.
Wow.
And I've been reading the books. So I ended up as an IT process control and development technician. I was the only software guy. We were the guys who were responsible for keeping the manufacturing plant going.
What is the title again? IT process technician?
Process control technician.
Process control technician, okay.
So it's more the lower end. So I was doing things like talking to PLCs and intelligent devices.
Okay.
Collecting data of them and attaching them to products. That was 92. Then in 96, we were looking at the original software was written by a third party and they were getting expensive. And we was also looking at Y2K and we wanted to be able to produce more stuff and the computer systems were a bottleneck. And that they couldn't process the data fast enough, things like that. So it was I can do that time again. So my boss rocked up with two file servers,
mm-hmm.
two copies of Delphi 2 and two copies of SQL Server 6. These are all really old tech.
Mm-hmm.
And me and a guy called Mick, who did a lot of the device-based stuff, PLC program and things like that, wrote the entire piece of software to for the business systems to talk to the plant.
Awesome. That's great.
So I learned a great deal there. One of the big things I learned was writing robust code.
Okay.
Because there's two reasons for that. First of all, I got called out at 3 o'clock in the morning if the job stopped. Making my code readable to me, especially if you ever look at other people's code, comprehension is one of the big things. Yeah. So learning to read other people's code is a good skill. And other people's code is your own from 6 months ago when you forgot what you did. The other reason I learned to write robust code, and it definitely is a skill, is the guys on the mill floor got paid about 50% of their wages was based on how much product we produced.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stopped the job. So they were losing half their salary while the job was there. And they're all big, airy, hard guys, like Chuck Bert, bits of steel about. And I didn't really want a painful chat with them about how I'd screwed up again. That part of my career was really where I learned everything. I learned most how to do the job, not the techs. I've learned lots of techs since then. But I learned how to do the job, how to write good code, how to test it, how to know it was working, how to log what it was doing so you could track faults through your code and see where things had gone wrong. And that's possibly one of my main skills, that, reading other people's code. In 99, the business got bought out again.
Okay.
And this time they didn't want me. And one of the reasons they said I couldn't move up so I could be kept was because I didn't have a degree.
You could do the job.
Yeah, I did. I wrote their entire system to run the mill, but I still needed a degree. And they actually told me to my face that. That was one of the few times where I've met that sort of snobbery.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounded like a disaster, but there again, it actually set me on my next career path, because I simply left and got another job.
And the ability
that I can demonstrate when I talk to people about how to write code got me in the next part of my career. And I was moving about a lot there. I did a year in Peterborough, working in the insurance industry.
Okay.
And I did 2 years in Amsterdam as a contractor. If that's there's something to aim for. That was in telecoms. And then I did 6 years, four or 5 years contracting. So just pottering about between contracts, doing stuff that I knew for people, ran my own business for a bit. But I wasn't very good at that. I'm much better at developing than I am running a business. If you go the other way, you can get somewhere it just wasn't in me. So I went back to Standard Wage Earner, but I got the job at Sage. Okay. And Sage are huge. I spent the next 15 years there. I moved from Delphi. It took me in originally for Delphi skills and SQL Server. And I moved on to C#. I learned XSLT, XML, Python.
Okay.
And then they decided to move the products that we were, they were Windows products, desktop applications, and decided to move in the online space. So I learned Ruby on Rails as well. But that's one of the things when you've taught yourself to develop, or when you've learned to develop more correctly, changing tech shouldn't be that big a deal.
Yeah.
Recruiters make a lot out of it. You know, they want you to use, of, you know, 16 years experience in SQL Server 2018 and things like that. But it's not that big a deal. And then I fell out with Sage in after 15 years, so 2020. And I got my current role at Solo Protect, where I'm again talking to devices, but these are mobiles and mobile capable devices, picking up locations of people, tracking them. The idea is if you work as if you're a lone worker, and you get into trouble, you know, like say you're working in a shop by yourself and a customer starts hassling you or something like that, you've got a discrete device where you can press a button. We pick up the call, and if the human operator hears it, and if they hear, you know, distress and trouble and things like that, we'll get the police out or the or an ambulance or whatever's required. And that's basically what I do now. But my entire career has essentially been, for the first 15 years ago, it was making myself ready for any opportunity that came along. And then when one did come along, grabbing it with no fear. If you won't find out if you, I mean, I've made more than a few mistakes in my career. I've written more bugs than I have lines of code, probably. Wow. But sometimes deliberately. No, as in management told me to do it wrong. But it's you have to be there. There are people with degree who've gone to university that come out with honours degrees, and I've just trampled on them. I've just gone straight over them, through them, whatever, because I can do the job, and it's while they were away thinking about it, I'd snuffled it. I wasn't waiting about. So the only other instance of snobbery around the degree I've run into was a recruiter asked me what Red Brick University I'd been to. So he wanted a special university, not just. And that was 20 years into my career, for God's sake. Silly. I've met a few raised eyebrows when people find out I haven't got a degree, but it's. So how did you get the job then? Well, because I can do it.
Yeah.
I often interview new people, and it's if you're talking a junior trying to break into the industry neat with no experience and no qualifications is going to be nigh and impossible. So you've got to get one or the other. But one of the things we often look at is what have you done? So if you want to get into it, you know, work on open source, NuGet components for various environments, gems for Ruby, but get some public code out there, write your own little web pages. You know, WordPress, whatever tech you can get hold of, but get some real work out there that you can show people and you can stick on your CV. Because somebody who can demonstrate that they can do the job will win out over somebody who's got a piece of paper saying they might be able to do it. And in any way worth working anyway. I'm not the best person to do that, because I started when the industry was pretty new. The universities didn't even have CS courses.
At
the time that you took maths, and they taught you computing in there, not very well, because mathematicians generally are horrible programmers. They use one character variable names all the time. and it's only just started now where you're learning things like teamwork and collaboration and unit testing, things like that. I've been on a few outreach programs with the university and they've only just been introducing that. Don't worry about not working in the computer, because actually going out and getting a job will teach you a lot of things, especially if you're working with a team with other people and you're sharing the responsibility and the authority. That'll teach you to respect your co-workers and your team, and learn how to do that and learn how to work with people. It's the days where it was one guy down in the basement with a pencil and he's here tapping away and inventing Doom are pretty much gone, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, video, a lot of people want to get into gaming, but that's successful gamers are generally massive efforts. You know, there's the music and the videos and the sounds and all the texturing it's a big piece of work.
Yeah.
Probably the freest environment to get into now, as far as I can see, would be mobile app development.
Okay.
If you find, but that one needs you to, if you just want to write some code and get it out there and get accepted by Apple or Google, that's fair enough. But if you want to, you know, like, make money out of it, then you need that big idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of an implementer than so somebody else comes up with the idea and then I make it work. If you're a big ideas guy, and you can code a bit, then you probably get somewhere with that. But if you can't come up with that, if you can't come up with Angry Birds or first person shooter or platform or something like that, it's going to be hard to break in that way.
Okay.
If you want to do business programming, which is much easier, because producing reports and writing web forms and stuff like that, at that level, you don't have to worry as much about very low level things like support, performance and things like that, because the machines are so overpowered nowadays, you can gloss over any. Generally, you can gloss over anything. If you get to the level that I'm at, then it comes back into play again, because I'm doing microservices and things like that. So getting those performances is quite important, because you don't want to be sat there on your web page waiting 15 minutes to talk to a microserver. You'll just die and you'll lose your customers. But that's my story in a nutshell. There are many, many amusing anecdotes across the way. The thing that really is get yourself learning. Yeah, and the best way to learn to code is to code.
Yeah.
So find something to do, even if it's been done before and you're doing it again.
Okay.
Or you've got some code written in one language and you try and make it work in another.
Yeah.
But actually get something real out there, get it somewhere public, Git repos. If you've got enough kit to or you want to do Heroku or somebody like that, but get something out there. And then you can put that on your CV. You can put it in front of a hiring manager and say, this is what I can do. The other thing you need to learn to do, possibly more than you do with a degree, I don't know either way, is you need to learn to sell yourself.
Okay. I think that's also very important. When the tech industry has become more very competitive.
So you want to stand out for some reason.
Yeah.
And not because you're... And you don't want to stand out in a bad way. But there's... Because I'm so experienced now, I can wend my way through interviews. But back in the day, when I was trying to leave British Steel in 99, or even when I was trying to get my job at Sage, I was still didn't sell myself as well as I can now. That's one of the other things I would recommend, and it's one of the things I do, because I've had such long periods in a job, I haven't moved around a lot. Yeah. I've pretty much forgot all my interviewing skills by the next time it comes around to need them. So sometimes I've applied for jobs that I wasn't too enthused about.
Okay.
But just to get the interviewing the skills bedded in, and just to go for it, you know, to get down there and to get dolled up and present yourself.
Okay.
And see if you can get feedback. It's very hard to get feedback of people. But if you can get feedback, you know, if you came across as really nervous, or you didn't speak too well, or you fluffed an answer to a question, you know, see if you can get that feedback, and then you can improve for the next one. But one of the things I wouldn't recommend though is blagging, pretending you can do something.
Okay.
So you should be confident about it, because you get a bad rep from that quit, and that'll kill your career.
Okay.
That's one of the things. Yeah. Yeah.
So
we're talking about our careers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine and yours. We're not talking about our job at Acmeco. So the fact that you was your career is yours, so you manage it. Don't let the people who are employing you do it. If they want to take you in a direction that you don't want to go. I got a hit not so long back for working in Deck Basic, which nobody's used for about 30 years. But I do know, I still know a little bit about. And I'm thinking, I don't want to do that because it's a career killer. You do 4 or 5 years in Deck Basic and then try and go out to a recruiter, and they're all going to go, Deck Basic? No. Because you aren't doing something modern and new. It's not as important as recruiters make out, but it will hurt. So if you're working for somebody, you have to make that decision between, am I still learning here? Am I still developing?
Okay.
Or are they going to, or are they saying, right, you're good enough now, we're going to leave you there, so we never have to pay you more, etc. In which case, you tell them you're going to look for another job, and then you start looking. Don't let an employer control your career, because they'll make you a round peg in a round hole, mm-hmm. and you'll be getting your gold watch at 65 doing the same job. I can't think much more to say. Have you got any more detailed questions? Or?
Awesome. I must say that is a very fantastic story. And kudos for, you know, starting out and having that kind of confidence. Even when you were starting out, you were very affirmed in, trying to be ready for the job. Because mostly people have that kind of feeling where they think that they are not ready. They feel like they are not ready, and they kind of wait more to get to know everything before they probably want to try applying or going out there to, you know, start their career. But you started out, even when at a point maybe you felt like we're not ready, you were ready. You put out yourself ready, and you learned on a job. That's very awesome. That's very awesome. And then
you don't wait to be ready.
Yeah,
because tech changes that quick.
It's true.
You sit there and learn your .NET 3.0, get it. There's absolutely know everything. Meanwhile, they release .NET 5. So you're stuffed. So. And the transitions aren't as hard. You can once you learn how to actually program, as in, you know, break down a job into tasks, put them in order, figure out how each one is going to talk to each other, and how you're going to manage it. You can switch languages.
Yeah.
The second one's hard, but the third and fourth, it's just nothing. I mean, like I say, recruiters will make a big deal out of it if they can, but you can usually shut them down because they don't know what they're talking about anyway. But you've got to so if there's something, if you've got the time, get into machine intelligence on Azure.
Okay.
You can get yourself a free account and you can start learning stuff. Have a look around and pick your topic. But with the best will in the world, if you just learn at home and just doing a few projects and stuff, if you take longer than, 3 to 6 months to get yourself where you say, right, I think I could go and apply for a job in this. If you take longer than 6 months, that tech will have gone before you get there.
That's right. So, you
can learn really old stuff.
Okay.
You learn really old stuff. You learn COBOL. There's loads of job in COBOL.
JavaScript has also changed a lot. Like you mentioned, the technologies are changing really, really fast. All those that started out earlier on, they have a lot of upgrade. Now they are having different versions that if you kind of sit down and trying to learn one language or trying to be knowing everything about it before you go out there, like you mentioned, by the time you are ready, you think you're ready, there'll be a different version out there and that's also going to keep you down like that.
That's why you need to either be working for somebody,
okay,
so you can get that, or doing your own stuff, but don't wait around it. If you're going to do a project, have a go at it, put it out there, learn the next bit, and then iterate through it, because that's how software works in the real world. Nobody waits about to write a software product and gets every I dotted and T crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do that, your competitors will rush in with something nowhere near as good as yours, but snap up the market while you're not looking.
Mm-hmm.
So you treat it the same. You're a developer. You're on the market. Get something working, or writing a language you're very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've figured out how to do it, then write it in the new one that you want to learn. I've had guys turn up to, oh yeah, I've done this, and they'll point you a website and you can go look at the code. And that's guys with degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in IT. I've worked with more than a few people who've got a degree but not a computer science one.
Okay.
One of them was in Japanese history. He was actually in charge of me. He was good and all. It's getting over that first hurdle that's a hard bit. If you get your feet under the table and get actually developing,
okay,
as long as you're decent and you enjoy it, you'll be off.
Awesome. Trying to go back a little bit. At a point you mentioned you had experience working with a colleague, you built the entire system. What are some of the things that you learned during that moment? Probably working with people, like we mentioned, this time around, great things are not really built alone, during the olden times where you sit at your deck and probably design the whole thing and come out. Yeah. But now you've got to learn how to work with a team. You're going to have a product manager. You're going to answer to a different people. You have a whole team to work with. So what are some of the things or the skills that you learned, working with someone different?
Working with other developers is always fun because people think differently and they see problems from a different perspective. If you've got a mate who's also learning, that's a good thing to do.
Okay.
Learn together. Because one of you will say, you might find a better way, or you'll find a worse way that you're never going to do again, which is just as valuable. Team-wise, not so much working with other developers, but the biggest collaborations I've done with QA. Writing the code in a way that they can test it,
Okay.
Even on your own projects, don't skip unit testing. If you can show that you've done unit tests and that they work, that will be a big thing with a hiring manager. But collaborating with QA, so, you know, providing with the documentation, doing show and tell sessions, and learning to respect them. So the QA people come along and say, Tony, you spelt the T-E-H wrong somewhere. You know, they'll come up with piddly horrible bugs. And you have to pull it all back and change the spelling and send it across again. And you think, you know, that wasn't a big thing. But a good QA will say, when I clicked on this button, nothing happened or it crashed or something. And you'll think, why has he clicked that button? And it's because you left it in there, or because there'll have been a misunderstanding about what the code's meant to do, either on your part or on their part, or a communication failure. Something's changed in between when you wrote it and they tested it. I find I've done a fair bit of automation stuff as well, and I really like working with a good QI.
Okay.
Because of that. One of the things you never, ever want to be in a position is, especially when you're working for highly visible companies like Sage, or Solar Protect, to be honest, is you don't want to be the guy who puts a piece of code on production that leaks everybody's email.
Okay.
You don't want to be that guy. Or does something equally awful.
Yeah.
Or just takes the site down for an hour or two or something like that. You don't want to be in the manager's office with team busy explaining exactly how that happened.
Okay.
And QA is one of your after your own little tests, most of which developers don't make good testers. But the QA guy, he's the guy who saves you from looking like an idiot and
ending up in your manager's office.
Yeah. It's the one who tapes Boris Johnson's mouth closed before he opens it and things like that. So I really enjoy working with QA. I also worked with some UX specialists, which is another technique, and I learned a lot doing that. Things that I'd never, I'm more of a back end guy, but
yeah,
there were ways of looking at the looking at what the product was meant to do, a view of the product that I hadn't thought of, such as an easy flow through.
Okay.
You know, is it, when I went on that Calendly thing to book this appointment, it wasn't clear to me that I needed to click the
submit or something like that
button. So it didn't come up to submit until you press this button, and it was just a blue square on the screen.
Okay.
Now, the UX people I'd worked with would have, you know, pulled their hair out if I'd have done that to them.
Yeah.
What do I click? It should be obvious. that's been really enjoyable. I've also done a few bits of mini project management. Okay. So working with actual projects architects.
Okay.
So they're guys who come with the big picture stuff. I want you to do this like that. And you're going, why? Eventually it becomes clear. And occasionally, because I have worked in some high value places, I've worked with some security specialists as well. So learning how to write secure code so I don't leak things out and things like that. Getting advice on how to manage keys and so forth. Your colleagues are the guy, they're not hindrances, they're helps. Sometimes it might be difficult to explain being able to explain how a piece of code works without getting into, you know, technical details is a good skill. I once spent 2 hours trying to explain to a manager why floating points weren't accurate, and it's not a conversation you want to have because he never got it. I could not explain to him the decision between precision and accuracy. And I said, look, it's like this. If you add them up like that, you get a rounding error. So you can't. that almost got to swearing. That one. Because I was brought up on a steelworks, and I'm a bit in your face. I occasionally lapse into profanity when somebody wasn't listening. But that hasn't hurt me either. Be yourself. Don't pretend to be somebody else.
Okay.
Learn your stuff. Do your stuff. Get there.
Okay. So one of the questions we ask is some of the tools that you work with, and most of the answers have been probably you just get your laptop or your desktop. And you get access to your internet and you are gone. Is it the same in your case?
Tools, depends on which way I look at it. So, I've got my laptop and VPN to get onto the my employer's stuff. Okay. So, I mean, Visual Studio is mostly what I use. But when I was learning Ruby on Rails, I was using Vim and Tmux. I learned from the command line. Mm-hmm. I still do Git from the command line. I don't use the tools. It is a handy thing, actually, to actually know, because there was a lass I was working with. She'd come from a Windows environment onto Rails, and she was just totally knackered at the command line.
Okay.
She couldn't deal with it at all. So she'd download these little UIs that people had made. Said, I've clicked on this and it hasn't worked. What has it done? I'm like, I don't know. Why didn't you do it at the command line? And then you'd have known what you were doing. Smashed the Git repo twice. I don't really think about tools too much.
Okay.
Getting computer time is obviously, but I learned on paper. I didn't have a computer. That was in machine code, but there's actually nothing wrong with, you know, writing down on paper, working your way through, just thinking about the steps. It's only the difference between typing it. You know, you could write the code and give it to a typist and they could type it in. Only problem is they won't know whether they've misplaced a semicolon or something like that and made it something completely different. I used to type coding out of magazines that had been badly typeset. Just to type it in hex, so you'd know, 00OAFF, like that.
Right.
You're typing it and then made a slight mistake and put FE in there, and that was a completely different instruction in the 8-bit. It's on the computer. You spent hours typing all this stuff in to play this new game, and you press the button and your computer just went dropped into interrupt mode, and you had to turn it off and turn it back on again. There's nothing wrong with coding on paper. It's much better. I mean, if you can, but you can get VS Code or Visual Studio. There's a fair few online tools, especially in the Linux space. You can download loads of stuff for free, and they'll give you type ahead, let you jump to places in the code, things like that. Makes the job easier.
Yeah. So.
You said, where did I put that class? But you can go right click, go to.
It's quite saves you time and a lot of quality time these days, you know. The way the tools that we work with have advanced.
Very much so.
I think even in VS Code and a lot of the other tools like Atom and the rest, you kind of get spell checker. You get suggestions and all this stuff.
I still pay attention to it, but when Visual Studio comes up with a warning, right, done that wrong, and get it fixed.
Okay.
But the the productivity enhancers. They aren't for doing this. You should, in theory, you could code in Notepad. You just have to remember a lot of stuff. I mean, trying to remember all the members and method names of all the classes in visuals in C Sharp in .NET would be difficult, to say the least. So that, you know, if you've got a .NET capable editor and you type one of the standard things in, it'll dot and then oh yes, sort, blah, needs that. And, otherwise, you've got a book open.
Essentially, the tools help us do our job, but you kind of have to get a skill actually solving the problem. That is the most important thing.
If you can't code, I can give you the best tool in the world. You know, it's just not going to work. It's like giving a monkey a hammer. Like, it's not going to make you a table. But you could do it with, you know, a rock, if you knew what you're doing. So if you think of primitive tools when our ancestors were making things, they were using bits of stone and antler and stuff like that. But they made a chair you could sit on, and it worked. So you can still use the old tools, and they are cheaper and easier to find, but the better tool you've got, the faster you'll be. The speed can count, actually. I can write bugs faster than anybody else with better tools.
Awesome. So what would be advice to someone that has the interest or desire in getting into tech, but they are coming from a different background, probably let's say design, medical professional and something like that. What would be your advice to someone like that? Probably they are hesitant because they feel like they don't have that kind of computer science degree, so it's going to be difficult. What would be your advice to them?
So I've done academic computer science stuff, and I've talked to guys, and most of it you just never ever use. You'll never use Big O notation or the Vienna development method. It's very rare that you have to sit there and work out whether you should use recursion or iteration, things like that. So all the low-level technical stuff you learn in computer science, it's already been done for you. If you're in .NET, you know, my list of objects dot sort by name, that's it. You don't care how .NET is actually sorting that. You don't care which algorithm it's used or how performant it is, because it's actually clever enough to pick the best one based on your data. The only time that would really matter is if you were working on something really high power, really high powered or high performance, you know, collecting millions of measurements a second or something like that. But most of the time, you're just talking about sorting out some store, some guys by name, so you can stick them in the drop-down combo and pick them. You know. So you don't need to know that. So and programming is just a way of thinking. It's just look at a job and just break. Instead of just thinking, if you looked at what was someone? Oh yeah, cleaning the cupboard. Have you seen your mum clean the cupboard? If she's good at it, what she'll do is, say the cupboard's got three shelves, she'll empty the shelves from the bottom, and then she'll sweep the shelves from the top. That's programming. You're emptying the shelf at the bottom because when you pull it, if you empty it from the top, you'll pull all the dust onto the stuff lower down. And you clean it from the top because you clean it from the bottom. Then we clean on the second shelf, you'll pull all the dust on. So it's just thinking like that. Or digging two holes side by side. You want to dig two holes side by side. If you're right-handed, you're going to go like that. If you dig that one first and you're right-handed, you're going to, when you do the second one, you're going to tip soil in there. So you have a think about it, and you either dig the wrong one first, or you get really clever and you go around the other side and dig the other one. But yeah, it's just one of the first exercises I got in computer science was write down the steps to an addition in a calculator.
Okay.
So I write down the steps to do, you know, 6 + 5 on your calculator. Okay. And then people went over and said, right, press 6, press plus, press 5. And there you go. I said, well, you forgot press equals.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't turned the calculator on. No. So if think about a task like that, write down the steps, and then actually, you know, dry run through them, actually try and go through. You go, oh, I haven't turned it on.
Okay.
Step one, turn on calculator. But then just thinking through it like that. But that's literally all programming is. Take a complex task and break it down into simple steps.
Okay.
And loads of people do that. I use my programming skills and other things. If I'm cooking a meal for 8, I actually sit down and write a plan, right? Put the veg on, put this, that'll take half an hour, so I need to put that on then, and figure out how to get it all there so the food arrives on the table,
okay, cooked
and still warm. When I'm doing woodwork, I do the same thing. And there are a lot of people who have that skill who don't work in programming.
Okay, yeah.
Any decent cook who's cooked for a load of people, you know, a three course meal by themselves or with a helper, will have worked out what they have to do when, in what order,
to
achieve the end result. And that's what programming is.
Okay.
It's not. We'll have a laugh and we'll call ourselves arcane techno, you know, techno wizards and things like that.
It's basically following your steps and solving the problem.
Yeah. So the key thing is finding out your steps, making sure that makes sense.
Okay.
And then programming, in the original days, what used to have what's called a systems engineer, and he used to do that bit.
Okay.
And all the programmer did was turn his description of it into actual code.
Okay.
So he never came up with an algorithm. He never came up with the steps, the programmer. He was the guy who translated it so the machine could understand it. That was the first. That was a job. Now, because of the better tools and everything, everything's compressed and you do everything at once. But that used to be the step. But yeah, so if you've got a decent idea of how to solve the problem, you should be able to express it in any language.
Great.
Yeah, there'll be subtleties that change how you do it on occasion and things like that. And if you was unfortunate enough to program in C or something like that. But if you're using a high-level language, it should be a breeze. But and then the only question for you when you're doing it is, are you like me and just get straight into the code, or do you want to sit down and draw some boxes on the wall and figure things out? And so I'm trying to do a bit more design before I do code at the moment. I've got a bad habit of learning by my mistakes. Code half of it and then realize I forgot something. But that's the other thing. I actually resisted at Sage being called an expert. I'm obviously competent at my job because I've been doing it so long and people have been paid me, you know, a reasonable wage for doing it.
Okay.
But I only describe myself as competent. I don't call myself an expert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very suspicious of experts. They usually do a great deal about very little. That'd be one of the good things for managing your career. Try and get as many strings in your bow as well. So if there is a UX course available, even though you're a developer, take it, you'll learn stuff. If there's a course on QA, and even if you don't like it or you don't feel you're very good at it, it's not your thing.
Okay.
It'll help you relate to people, those sorts of people, when you work with them, because they've got their own terminology and jargon and domain, and they'll throw out a term and you won't. But if you've gone off and just done a UX for dummies, or learn UX in 15 days, But, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. But at least you'll know the terms. Same for learning a new language. Read a verb book, have a go, go back and read the book again to realise all the stuff that you missed. But want to learn is probably... The guys who went to university spent 3-4 years doing nothing but learning with occasional bit of drinking and partying. But you haven't got that. You haven't got that guy who knows what the answer should be.
Okay.
If you're teaching yourself. You can go onto Google and you can look for it.
Yeah.
But at least half the answers on Google are complete rubbish and will get you sacked. So don't just take an answer off the internet, by the way. Yeah. Actually, so right. This guy thinks this is the answer. Now go try it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tools that I do use a lot, I'm not as frequent on it as I used to be, but Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant resource.
Yeah.
Because if you ask a silly question on there, you get told it's a silly question and why it's a silly question. And if you put a bad answer in, you know, you put somebody says, how do I query the database from their name and address on the web form? Certainly in the old days, it's getting a bit better now, but you'd find 5 or 6 answers that were basically a SQL injection attack. And if you did it that way, a hacker would be straight into the site that you managed and steal all your data.
Okay.
But if you go on somewhere like Stack Overflow, somebody will go, you give yourself a SQL injection, see this, and that will prompt you to learn something. And then you might be interested in that and you'll go off and do something. So actually going on, possibly making a fool of yourself, but actually going on to Stack Overflow and trying to answer the questions. So if you're looking for something to do, you know, look at the problems that are concerning people and Stack Overflow, there are questions, and you'll see a lot of similarities, but learn how to answer that question properly. You know, how to find all the records that are in one table that are not in another one. With SQL and things like that. So there are regular problems that you'll run into all the time. And the new guys are going on to Stack Overflow are asking that question. So if you can answer the new guys' questions, you're better than the new guys. Because they couldn't. If you get decent at it, you can actually build up a reputation on Stack Overflow. I think it says somewhere in here, I'm in the top 4% of 6 million developers on the site.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice, you know, I put my Stack Overflow link on my CV. Hey, oh, look at that. Hey.
You've been solving people's problems, and that's also an achievement.
Yeah. I haven't answered the question on there for 2 years, I don't think, but I'm still there. So I don't know. But, I mean, some of the questions I can't answer. I'm like, wow. That is another way of getting reasonable requisition to pass to a hiring manager. Stack Overflow, I definitely recommend that. And you'll learn a lot. You say, oh, I don't know how to do that either. So you can go off and then look at the answers, and because the answers are vetted, you'll not see ones in there with points that are silly and wouldn't, say, give you a SQL injection attack or leak data all on the internet. Or you see stupid questions. How do I write my own cryptographic algorithm? You don't, ever. You use ones written by really intelligent people who are very, very clever at just that. And you just use their thing as a dot encrypt. That's all you need to know.
Okay. So one of the questions I like to ask is there any moment in your time that, you know, you felt demotivated, or you kind of felt like, you know, probably this task that you're giving me is more than my capabilities? And if there was an instance like that, how did you get over it? How did you get around that kind of situation?
A problem I can't solve doesn't really demotivate me, but I, so early on in my career, I'd be desperately trying to fix it. Okay. Now I ask. Okay. I ask for help.
All right.
And as I said, there are Stack Overflows, there's the community you're building. I mean, if somebody's got, if somebody is trying to solve a problem and they're struggling, if there's somewhere where you can kind of get some help, you might get somebody like me pop in and say, oh, yeah, you want to do that and that. And then if you look here, I'll tell you how to do that. And you want to look for this thing, box packing out of the room or something like that. When I first started learning Windows, I wasn't allowed an internet connection because I was too low down in the food chain. So I had no internet.
Okay.
I was writing code in a brand new language on Windows NT, which I'd never seen before, using SQL Server, which I'd never used before. And I was writing away my code, and it kept falling over and dying intermittently in weird ways. And I couldn't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
I was tearing my hair out. I was working extra hours because I was absolutely sure it was something that I'd done wrong in my code.
Yeah.
So I went to my boss and said, look, I'm knackered here. I can't do this. I don't know what's wrong. I need to go on a training course. He says, what do you think you should learn first? I says, I need to learn this Windows NT stuff because it's new and I'm treating it like the old stuff. So he sent me off on a course and I got to day one and said, right, now we'll install Windows NT. I says, right, now we'll put the service pack on. You know what a service pack in Windows is? It's the Windows update type stuff to fix all the bugs in there.
Yeah. Okay.
And I went, because I'm in my first day of my training course, and I went, service pack? I hadn't put one on. I was using the NAF alpha version.
Okay.
So, after the course, I went back to work, and I put the service pack on, and 9 out of 10 problems went away.
All right.
But that's, there's no way I could have ever solved it. It doesn't matter how good I am, because the software I was using was buggy.
Yeah.
So ask. The other good thing about asking is, especially as a developer, is you often get in a place where you can't see the wood for the trees. You're just missing something obvious. Yeah. At Solo Protect, we have superheroes. Oh, no, ducks. Superhero ducks, they are. So it's a little plastic duck, but done up in various superheroes. And that's there. So if you're working by yourself and there's nobody to help, you ask the duck.
Okay.
And just articulating the problem. So I was doing this and I went there. Oh, God. You forgot a step. You got so focused on that little bit, you forgot the I've often done it. I'm struggling. I'll go to the Matt. I'm doing this and this don't matter.
just you found the answer.
Just starting at the beginning again and walking through the steps, you suddenly realize the glaring error that you've been banging your head against your screen for 2 hours for. And when you're learning alone by yourself, you will run into that a lot.
Okay,
you won't be asking yourself the right question. You'll be working way down here and the actual problem's over there somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's a few developer friendly sites on there. There's lots of groups that join up. There'll be somebody there who's willing to help you.
Okay.
And you might just, you might have a mentor or something. You'd be just typing it out. So I did this and I did that. Cancel, go back. But yeah, just articulating your problem.
Okay.
It might even work explaining it to your mum, but then she might ask too many questions. Something's possible. You don't want to talk to somebody who thinks they know how to do it. Somebody who knows absolutely nothing or somebody who knows everything, that's the best place. Working on your own is hard.
Okay.
I don't recommend it. find a buddy. You know, if you're on this group, you know, like set up a group of people who are close to each other, or people who are in the same time zone or something.
Yeah.
Help each other out, because that's one of the things you'll learn. You might even say, I want to work on that with you. And you might end up with your own little mini team. And then you might be saying to yourself, right, well, I'm going to do that bit, and you do that bit, and the interface is there. So all of a sudden you're doing some project management. You might say, right, I've done that bit. One of the things we do a lot at work is peer review.
Okay.
So another developer will have a quick glance over my code to see if I can spot anything stupid in there. Or I made, you know, the classic mistakes, magic numbers and magic, you know, like it's X equals 62,322. What does 62,322 mean? Ah, that is the ID of the device ID equals 65,502. X equals device ID. You know, fix that. So you get a lot out of that. If you've got somebody who's prepared to teach you, don't invert the relationship. So the temptation is for the guy who knows what he's doing diving down, and then you're trying to keep up. Can you just tell me about line 2 again? No, I was on line 40. Do it the other way around. You have a go. Get him to vet it, or her, even. Gender doesn't matter either. Any girls who want to get an IT, please do. We need more. And ethnic minorities and everybody. The more different perspectives you get into the job, the better off you are.
Okay.
It's not diversity of gender or color or creed or anything like that. It's diverse thinking.
Okay.
Somebody who thinks different to you will come up with an answer that you just wouldn't think of, and possibly for weeks. And they say, "Oh, why don't you do that?" And you go, "Damn." Or you'll give it a go and it'll turn out to be a complete lemon and would never work, but you've learned something. You learn from failure. You learn far more from failures than you do from successes.
Okay.
I mean, once you've accidentally not checked your code in and then delete it, you'll learn not to do that ever again. Or mixed up rebase and merge on Git and completely smashed your repo. No, you're not going to do that again, because undoing it is most painful. Yeah.
Okay.
So I've just deleted the database. Yeah. Did you take a backup? Ah.
yeah, you screwed everything.
No, I didn't take a backup. Well, we're buggered now, then, aren't we? You can learn a lot of fail. Don't be worried about failing. Have a go, fail, learn from it. Nobody writes unless it's, you know, like print hello world. You're not going to write any meaningful piece of code without making a mistake. Have a go.
Okay.
If it doesn't work, look at why it doesn't work. Learn from it.
Okay. Awesome. It was very, very nice talking to you, Anthony. Is there anything you think that I didn't ask, but you want to get out there a message?
I think we got good coverage there, but the only thing I would say is, you know, learn what you can, get good at that. If it turns out you've got a gift, I basically I'm a born programmer. There's loads of things I'm not good at, but I can program. And I only accidentally learned that skill because of that free period at school. I've worked with other guys who've come in to be a programmer, and it turned out it wasn't really their skill set, but they turned out to be really good at QA
or
UX. or they make excellent project managers. I know lots of guys have moved into programming or out of it. And I know people who've come from completely different backgrounds into it. I've had a guy's leader, one of the best QAs I work with, he went off to be a mathematician, a professional mathematician, because that's what he wanted to do. But it's and you'll learn stuff. Keep learning.
Okay.
You never know everything. Keep learning, and do it as long as you enjoy it.
Awesome.
If you stop enjoying it, stop doing it because you'd be crap. Don't go into IT because you hear these massive salaries. Because for a long unless you're absolutely brilliant, unless you invent Angry Birds and set up your own business, you aren't going to break into that level of IT with no degree. Nobody will even look at you. You'll have to have done something first. You're not going to go in cold. Just get things done. Code.
Okay.
Code a lot. I used to code 8 hours a day and then go home and code another 4 or 5 hours in the evening on my own stuff.
Yeah.
I coded as a hobby and as a job. I've stopped doing that now, actually, because I wasn't getting as much fun out of it. But that's after 35 years. So, it stood me in good stead when I started. And the opportunities, don't pass them.
Okay.
But even if it doesn't sound like exactly the right one, if it's close, get in there. Knock all them people with silly bits of paper and flat hats out the way and get the job.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Anthony. That was a very awesome and very inspiring story you had there. We're very grateful and glad that you joined us today. We hope that we'll be able to do this another time and have a wonderful time and enjoy your time out there. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.